When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Welcome to Book Talk for Book Talk, a podcast where we deep dive into the writing of your favorite novels.
This season, we're exploring Sarah J. Maas's first installment in the Crescent City series. This is Jack.
And I'm Amy. This is part two of this week's episode.
The views expressed by the hosts are entirely their own and in no way represent the thoughts or intentions of the original author.
This podcast is a discussion, shared to spark thought and conversation on the characters and themes of this novel.
The interpretations presented in this podcast are just a few of the many possibilities. Listeners are encouraged to read along and share their own analysis of the text.
Though the hosts speak mostly within the constraints of this book, series and extended universe spoilers may be discussed with or without warning.
Explicit language, as well as themes of sex, violence, abuse, depression, self-harm, and death will recur throughout this podcast. Listener discretion is advised.
It's at this point that the Autumn King decides to visit Bryce at the gallery. And why? Why is my question. We learn through the Autumn King's visit that Bryce has been lying to her parents about what's going on in Crescent City and about Hunt's involvement in the current events. And I think part of that is because Bryce feels like she made the same mistake as her mother and is ashamed of that and does not want her mother to know that.
Mm-hmm.
The Autumn King, during his visit, tells Bryce that while she may be like her mother, she is more like him, her father, than she knows, and that that is not a good thing. And this whole interaction makes me want to like him, and it makes me so mad. And Jack is just shaking her head violently.
I'm very mad. Okay, book three spoiler, because I'm about to go on a rant here. The reason why, the quote-unquote reason why he shows up is to tell her, don't worry, the governor knows not to go for you. Meaning he protected her. You're telling me that SJM wrote this Autumn King with without her planning on him being a good guy in the end, or not good, but at least redeemable. And she, being SJM, spends so much time in this book and in the next book saying that Bryce and the Autumn King are so alike. So many times Rune says that's just how, you know, that Bryce looks just like our father. So many times someone points it out, whether it's the Autumn King or Bryce herself. And I like, this is meant to humanize him. This is meant to make her powerful. The similarity goes nowhere. You're telling me that we don't see her like, oh, okay. So you're telling me that this similarity that you are shoving down our throats, it was either A, meant to show that Bryce can be truly evil if he's supposed to be evil, or B, show that he's capable of being good one way or the other, right? Like one of them is supposed to sway. We get neither. Yeah. We get neither of those things.
Yeah, I do wonder, because that was my thought as well, to what extent are we assuming this is humanizing him, whereas we're supposed to see and question some of Bryce's qualities because of her similarity. But we just, Bryce is just so pure. I don't care if she has resting bitch face.
Like, that's all it comes down to, is that she has resting bitch face. Leave her alone.
Yeah, so what if she's got opinions?
And also, like, why is he hot? It's unfair. Because I don't get to lust for him. Quote, tall, muscled, with an impossibly beautiful face beneath that long red hair. He looked just a few years older than her, too, dressed like a young man with those black jeans and matching long-sleeved t-shirt. Why is he wearing jeans and a t-shirt? Everything about this man screams suit and tie.
I was thinking more like a billowy white blouse and tight black pants.
Like jeans and a tee, my man? Like yeah. That's what you're wearing? You're the king.
Yeah.
You're the autumn king.
And he revels in his kingliness.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is disturbing how informal he is.
Like, is he trying to relate to Bryce? Is he trying to get on her level?
That's my interpretation.
It's just unfair to me because we have this quote. I loved your mother very much, you know. Do not think I have not spent every moment since then regretting my actions, living in shame. I would have made her my queen. I had the paperwork ready. And this will be my great white whale. This is my great whale. This is my Roman Empire that SJM set him up to be redeemable. Do not dare tell me otherwise, SJM. This is what you did. Now face the consequences.
This comes at a peculiar time. Bryce has just been betrayed by Hunt. She is questioning everything Hunt has ever done.
Mm-hmm.
The Autumn King then comes in. Bryce never questions who the Autumn King is. She mm-hmm. despises him consistently.
Mm-hmm.
She never thinks that, oh, maybe I should give him a chance. However, as a reader, we have gone through this same betrayal with Hunt. Is this a red herring? The Autumn King shows up and SJM intentionally makes this interaction what it is because we are in the mindset to question him and to question whether what we've assumed for a long time Hunt was good and he's made poor choices. We've assumed for a long time the Autumn King is bad. Because of its proximity to what just happened with Hunt, do we then maybe think, oh, maybe we've assumed too much. Too much about the Autumn
King. Maybe there's a little bit more to him.
Right, exactly. And I think in some ways that's why we are so convinced of his potential goodness.
Mm-hmm.
But it could just be SJM fucking with us.
No. No.
I feel like I made a great point.
Yeah, no, you did. But no, she's not just fucking with us. I am so mad at her. This is my one question if I could get.
Yeah.
From her. It's like, and I need to get her nice and tipsy so that I can get a real honest answer.
Good luck.
God.
She just had dinner with
Margot Robbie. Yeah.
I wish I could be at that table.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Oh, sorry. I'm just like revved up.
At the start of chapter 69, Victoria is dumped in the Melanoi Trench. I did not know this, but the Melanoi is a chthonic nymph or goddess involved in one of the Orphic hymns and represented as a bringer of nightmares and madness.
Mm.
So totally appropriate that this is where Victoria
is
dropped because she's going to go mad and live out her worst nightmares.
Yep.
Hunt vomits because of dreams of Victoria being stuck in her box at the bottom of the sea. And again, we've talked about vomiting before, typically representing humanity or weakness. And Hunt is and should be at his weakest right now.
Yeah.
He has broken his own heart. He has broken Bryce's heart. His friends have been tortured and killed. He is in no shape to be mentally or physically strong.
Mm-hmm. CC3 spoiler. Then maybe you should have tried looking for her. You are going around in a big ass sub in CC3.
I am really disappointed that they didn't free her.
Not even a thought.
Nope.
Not even a mention of saying like, wow, we won that war. Can someone please free Victoria?
Maybe they'll free her after the events of Crescent City 3 and we'll see her in a future book.
You don't think she would have been useful?
Ugh, who knows?
Right? Couldn't she have taken over an Asteri body?
I don't know if that's a good thing.
No, I'm just saying, like, you know, there's potential.
Yeah, there is. I want to point out an interesting connection between Hunt's point of view right now and Bryce's point of view from when the Autumn King visited. They are both triggered by the smell of those who have wronged them. So Bryce smells the Autumn King, and it reminds her of that time that he abandoned her mm-hmm. at the Oracle. And Hunt smells Sandriel. Quote, a scent that stalked his nightmares, whetted his rage to a thing that made it impossible to think. And this makes sense because, A, they're Vanir. They have a heightened sense of smell. So it makes sense that these things come up. But I thought it was a nice little parallel that the use of smell can elicit negative reactions. Mm-hmm. I just thought it was well done.
No, absolutely. Sandriel then shows Hunt this lovely little slideshow from the photos on his phone. And there are things that were a celebration are now punishment in his life. And it's a punishment, again, coming back to what could have been. Mm-hmm. It is a little funny to me that everyone's around him being like, bro.
Yeah, like we all saw it.
You fumbled.
Yeah.
You could have been okay. And it's because Hunt had learned to stop and smell the roses mm-hmm. like Bryce. Mm-hmm. He could see the progression of her, the progression of him. It made me think because, like, our friends do this thing where we do a slideshow after every vacation or trip we do. I haven't done my chili slideshow yet. It's because I think I want to make empanadas.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, this is like a messed up version of that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, you know, what it reminds me of is the fact that a lot of the time Hunt's perspective, when we read from his perspective, he's only been able to see the puddles in front of him, the trash in front of him. He's not able to see the city beyond.
Yeah.
But he sees in the pictures that he was taking photos of, quote, interesting graffiti along the alleys, of clouds, and things he normally never bothered to notice, but had suddenly wanted to capture. And so his perspective was expanding. He was stopping to smell the roses. He also took a lot of pictures of food, or Bryce took a lot of pictures of food, which I found fun to read about. We see Hunt drinking a beer, Hunt making breakfast for Bryce, and he takes photos of other food that they've eaten, just like the rest of us humans who take pointless photos of food we never look at again.
Speak for yourself. I go back and look at the food photos all the time.
I don't. Yeah. I think it makes me too sad to do that. What it symbolizes to me is the strength they had developed together, that they were sharing strength by being together. And it is tragic that Hunt no longer has that. And this is just a beautiful culmination of this action and this use of cell phones that we've seen throughout this book for it to come back and bite Hunt in the ass. It's really great.
Yeah, I enjoy it. It's a great time. It is funny because we do know that there were photos of the bodies on his phone, mm-hmm. but they never come up. Mm-hmm. So in my mind, there was an intern putting together the slideshow. Yeah. And I'm wondering, it would be great. They're like added a song and it's like, all the times we had together. I just like to imagine this intern just doing this, be like, cool, this is my torture.
Yeah, it's awful.
I just love kind of going back to what you're saying about what he took photos of, mm-hmm. because I think it also shows that he was willing to appreciate life without Bryce.
Yeah.
It wasn't just her.
Right. But her influence helped him appreciate life in general.
Exactly. Bryce thinks something similar to this quote that Sandriel's about to say. Quote, but you couldn't be patient, couldn't be smart, couldn't choose this, she gestures to their photos, over your own petty rage. And it is, again, what he keeps being faced with, whether it's from Isaiah or Sandriel, and even what Bryce is thinking is like, you didn't choose her.
Right.
And he didn't choose her. At the end of the day, it's really between his rage and Bryce.
And he finally realizes his rage isn't worth it. His revenge isn't worth it.
Yeah.
But he still chose it.
Yeah, it is brutal having every single person point it out and thinking about it. And just the way that a lot of times I feel like this happens in books where the character be like, he didn't choose me, he chose this. And mm-hmm. sometimes I'm like, no, it's not comparable. This is one that I'm like, this is truly comparable.
Yeah.
And he did, in fact, choose something else. He didn't choose you, Bryce.
Right. So, yeah, Bryce has every right to feel the way she feels because it really was about him versus her.
Yeah.
His need for revenge versus her.
And even Sandril sees that.
Yep. When we shift back to Bryce's point of view, there's this quote. The lack of a brooding male presence guarding her back was like a phantom limb. And I really found this fascinating because in some ways, Bryce has metaphorically had her wings cut off by Hunt not being there. She has all her limbs. So what's the phantom limb? It's Hunt. And to me, it's just a parallel to Hunt having his wings cut off. Bryce has now had her wings cut off.
Mm-hmm.
And that those wings are Hunt. And it's just a really, really tragic thing to think about that she had come to care and rely on him so much that it's like losing an arm or losing a leg,
mm-hmm.
which just makes me sad for her.
Yeah.
Bryce is at a bar to meet up with Rune and to thank him for taking care of her when she was kind of despondent. During the course of this conversation, Rune offers for Bryce to come to his place to watch the big sunball game that's coming up. When Bryce asks why Rune keeps trying, he asks why she keeps pushing away. And that is a great touche moment. I thought that was very well played by Rune.
Yeah.
Bryce finally relents and says, quote, maybe we could start over on a trial basis only. And I thought this moment was really genius because it is a parallel to Connor at the start of the novel that, okay, Connor, we're going to do a trial date before the real date to see if we should date.
Yeah.
And Bryce is making that same move with Rune, which tells me she does want
mm-hmm.
to spend time with Rune. She really does want that friendship back, but she's afraid of being hurt again.
Yeah. And just like Connor dies, Rune then dies to her.
Yep.
Oh, yes. Stop giving people trial basis.
Yeah. You're just setting yourself up for failure.
I know. But when Rune asks Bryce why she keeps pushing him away, she thinks, quote, she didn't realize back then that the truth didn't matter. She wouldn't let it matter. And this is her thinking about her power
mm-hmm.
and her realizing that she doesn't want to disrupt his starborn status.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me about the other clues that we have from this. And that's like the memories of Danica
mm-hmm.
and the whole like, close your eyes, Danica.
Yeah.
We haven't had one of those in a long time.
Yeah.
I think it would have been really significant to have that.
Right here.
Here.
Interesting.
To link this because I feel like there aren't enough clues consistently given. Part of the reason, and one of the big reasons that Bryce pushes Rune away is because she doesn't want to get too close
mm-hmm.
because she's scared of what happens if the truth of her power comes out.
Right.
And the only thing we get about the truth of her power is the memory with Danica.
Right.
Again, I feel like that's like a memory that's kind of been dropped off.
Right.
And isn't consistent enough. It's a missed opportunity, personally, I think. I mean, there's nothing wrong with this book. Just, I feel like it could have been added.
Yeah, from a writing perspective, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah,
I do appreciate that Bryce's thought is the truth didn't matter, wouldn't let it matter. She wouldn't let it matter. Because I feel like she applies that to Danica.
Mm-hmm.
She's applying that to Rune now.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, she will apply it to Hunt.
Yeah. Chapter 70 has Fury in Bryce's space ready to go. They're going to fight it out right now. And we're reminded that they met in college. Again, I was annoyed at that earlier. Annoyed at it now. And like, what's your life story, Fury? Mm-hmm. Like, what are you about? Bryce sees Hunt in Fury, likely because the whole like feeling of abandonment right now. Quote, even when she and Fury had been partying, Fury never really lost that cold gleam, that calculation and distance. But Hunt's stare, like, you know, she's thinking about, she's even like trying to link those two together.
Yeah. Because as much as she doesn't want to think about Hunt, she wants to think about Hunt.
Yeah. And it's just funny where it's like, I don't think Hunt and Fury have much in common other than like they're deadly.
Right. They wear a lot of black.
Right. Like I was like, I'm like, not that you're reaching, but you can tell the girl's heartbroken.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, pizza delivery man comes back.
Hunt used to make me breakfast.
Yeah. Like Hunt also had hair. Just seeing him everywhere. As their argument starts to pick up, Bryce is ready for it. I mean, I did the dramatic ready twice. I apologize. Quote, Bryce let her friend see her true face, the one her father had talked about, the one that did not laugh and did not care for anybody or anything. Half yes. Half yes. I do think Bryce's true face is a little bit more serious. Mm-hmm. Girl, don't pretend like you don't care for anyone or anything.
Right, right.
It's cute. That's adorable. But I do think there's that predatory, do not mess with me mm-hmm. vibe that she's able to put out. I think she's still in denial. And I mean, not just denial. This is her trying to preserve herself.
Exactly. How much of this is self-preservation because of her daddy issues?
Oh, yeah.
She becomes her father to protect herself from her father and people like her father who will hurt her.
Or, I mean, and preserve herself from what's going on with Hunt.
Right.
If she's exactly. able to put on that mask, I don't care for anyone. I don't care for anything. Then she doesn't care about Danica. She doesn't care about Hunt.
She doesn't care about Rune. I mean, and that's what I'm saying is at the end of the day, anyone who hurts her is her father.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So the only way to protect herself from her father is to become her father.
Mm-hmm. Or which would make humanizing him even harder because he hurt her mother. He can't care. He's a monster. But if he starts to care and he starts to show some vulnerability, then that's going to mess up her own mask.
Exactly. As Bryce and Fury fight, and Fury opens up a little bit about her side of the narrative, Bryce, quote, grabbed a jar of almond butter, screwed off the lid, and dug in with a spoon. Well, have fun at the summit. See you in another 2 years. Bryce is over everyone's shit. Danica's, Hunt's, Fury's, Juniper's. I know it's small. But what I am seeing here, I think, is the Bryce that we're familiar with in Sky and Breath, Flame and Shadow, and the warrior we're going to see at the end of this book.
Mm-hmm.
Just like her leg is currently free of pain, which she comments on in this chapter, she's finding her own internal strength and is doing her best to not rely on anyone else to be strong.
Yeah.
Like, she's hurt by Hunt. And she ultimately loves people in her life, but she can be strong despite them. Mm-hmm. And she's starting to realize that. And this is the first time I think we've seen her eat something from her fridge that wasn't spoiled. So that feels significant.
Right? I mean, it's like her finding her own two legs.
Yeah.
And her own strength.
Yeah. Which she has to do to be able to do what she does at the end of this novel. I love that Syrinx is just sitting around, smiling in his chimera way, just trying to be loved, but keeping to himself. And we have to remember, Syrinx is symbolic of Hunt. So, of course, when Fury leaves after telling Bryce that Hunt is being given to Sandriel, and Bryce sees Syrinx, she thinks of Hunt, because the two are intertwined for her.
Mm-hmm.
And because she was able to free Syrinx, it makes sense then that her solution is, well, I can free Hunt. It's worked once before.
Yeah.
And if these two are the same, then I can free Hunt.
Then I can do it.
I can do it.
The chapter ends with this quote, and I feel like this quote makes me dislike the next chapter. And I'll tell you why. But here's a quote. I didn't say I wouldn't do something smart.
Is it wouldn't do or would do?
No, I wouldn't do. Because she says, don't do anything dumb. And she says, I won't do anything. I won't do anything dumb. But I didn't say I wouldn't do something smart. We'll get into it more, but I just really.
It's dumb.
It's dumb. It's not logical. I'm used to her being two steps ahead.
Yeah.
We'll go into it in a sec.
But I think we saw earlier in the book that, especially with when she was talking or asking about Synth in the meat market.
Her logic and her thought process has descended. Has gone down.
She's gotten stupider with Hunt around.
It's true. She's gotten so... Don't let a man bring you down, Bryce. Because, like, and I think, again, it comes into... When I think about Hosab, she is thinking three steps ahead. She's ahead of everyone. That's my girl.
Yeah. Well, she's desperate.
Mm-hmm.
So we move into chapter 71. And we learn, quote, Hunt had a night to puke out his guts. One night in that cell, likely the last bit of security he'd have for the rest of his existence. And the irony that a prison cell is his last place of security.
Yeah.
Is devastating to me.
Hunt worries about where he's going, quote, back to her castle in the misty mountain wilds of the northwestern Pangaea, to the graystone city in its heart. Normally, nature is a representative of a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, the wild, the untamed, typically in books is positive. And this city, the technology, this, I don't want to call it vapid, but, you know, it is what it is. Luxury of life is kind of typically depicted as a bad thing.
Right, because it corrupts.
Exactly. But now, for the first time, not for the first time ever, but for something that I'm not typically used to seeing, the wild is bad.
Right, because it represents undeveloped, backward, traditional, in a way that is threatening.
Yeah. And right now we're seeing technology is good.
Right.
Which is, you know, Bryce uses it to her advantage later. Just the writing technique SJM is crushing right now. As Hunt gets ready to leave his cell, quote, his back itched incessantly as he dressed, the cloth scraping against the wings that were taking form. Now, do I know what it's like to regrow wings? No. But I do know what it's like to be itching a bunch. As someone who had, I think I counted, I got 16 mosquito bites in Chile. It sucked.
Yeah.
And we all know what it's like to be really uncomfortable and anxious and you just want to itch and scratch. And I think it was just done so well of the, we're there, we're the reader. We don't, I can't relate to being an angel prisoner, but I can relate to this.
Yeah. And for me, it's the combination of the alliteration and the consonants, repetition of the consonants, the incessantly dressed scraping. It sounds like scratching against yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I think she layers in those writing techniques, which I love.
I want to scratch my arm.
I scratched my arm.
Okay, there we go. I just needed something.
I need to scratch my back, actually.
Now my nose. Okay.
Bryce offers Sandriel 97 million gold marks to buy Hunt. And it's been a long time since we've had an angel number, so I had to do it. 97 represents spiritual enlightenment, inner strength, understanding of one's true purpose in life, and the power to manifest your desires into reality. And quite frankly, that sounded like every other angel number I've read this season.
So there's anything we learned.
They're all the same. But wait. Bryce specifically calls out that she offers $12 million or 12 million gold marks more than Hunt's original price. And why 12? 12 in angel numbers means something in your life has been completed and it's time to turn your attention away from the past and look into the future. And that feels relevant to both Bryce and Hunt. Hunt has turned away from Shahar and is focusing on Bryce, wants to be with her. And Bryce is just like, okay, I'm going to forget how shitty you were, and I'm going to focus on trying to save you right now.
Yeah, the 12 was an interesting choice because it's not that much more.
No, it's not. When you think in terms of millions, and a ratio of 12 to 80 is not that much.
Uh-uh.
It's not even 20%.
We really talk like as if we're billionaires over here. But, you know, it's not that much. Yeah. It's not that tempting.
Right.
I mean, that's why Sandriel doesn't get interested until Bryce offers herself.
That's exactly right.
Which goes in my next note. Bryce offers herself to Sandriel in Hunt's place, and both Hunt and Rune are there to make sure it does not happen. How does that happen? Rune claims Bryce as his property. Now, that can only happen because at this point, Sandriel publicly declares, you are the Autumn King's only daughter.
Yeah.
And everyone just, what?
And Hunt is like, oh, yeah, she's got the same hair and eyes.
Oh, wait, maybe I should have noticed that?
Yeah.
What if, holy crap, you mean they're identical looking? Shocker. Oh, you mean her cousin that's cared about her nonstop?
Is actually her brother? Whoa.
What if he's like, you mean those fantasies I had of the three of us together?
That's incest?
Yeah. Here's how Rune claims her. Quote, she's my property, my father's, and I do not permit her to trade herself in exchange for Athalar. You are a fey female of my bloodline. You are my property and our father's until you marry. Why do I like that so much?
because you have problems.
Yeah. I was like, ooh, Daddy Rude, claim me as your property. Problems. Bryce, now at this moment, has lost the biggest and most important thing to her. The thing that she's been fighting for since her mom ran away from the Autumn King. Mm-hmm. And that is her identity, her ownership of herself. And now she's entered Fade Law.
Yeah.
She wasn't part of the Autumn King. He didn't publicly claim her. And just with this moment, all of the problems of Book Two start here.
Yeah.
Fae Law makes it so that she is owned by her brother and her father. And she doesn't follow that law, but now that her identity is out, and she's trying to use that for advantage to sacrifice herself for Hunt. And again, like my note here is somehow this makes Rune hotter. And I just like, you know, and Hunt is just sitting here being like, yes, claim her. Stop. do not let her trade herself. And this is going to be a Crescent City 2 spoiler. A lot of people are confused about when Hunt and Bryce got married. And I'm pretty sure, could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure they say Bryce says in for the Fae, mates are just as good, if not stronger, than marriage. Mm-hmm. And when she publicly declares Hunt as her mate, then he owns her. Because even now it says, you're not going to be owned until you're married. And right. Mates are just as equivalent as marriage. So part of her struggle is like, even in her identity, like she mentions a few times, now Hunt owns me.
Yep. Yep. Which she struggles with initially. What it also does is it completely negates her human identity.
Yeah.
And she's really, really clung to the humanity within her, to her human parents. And now it's as if they never existed.
Yeah.
Bryce is so mad at Rune for this. Quote, her fingers curled at her sides as if she'd punch him, claw him, shred him. She is going down into her primal fae-ness because she is ready for a fight. It really, really gets to her biggest problems with the Fae. Mm-hmm. And Rune has taken advantage of the thing she hates most about Fae.
Mm-hmm. And she's too harsh on her baby room. Like, she tells him, I will never forgive you if you do this. And never say never, because you will. But I'm going to come back to, and I feel like we did kind of settle on this earlier, but my question of like, this just doesn't make sense. I kept waiting for it to be a big old charade for Rune to be like, we did this on purpose. Like, we, you know, we all had a plan, and this is like what actually happened. And now we have a real plan what's happening. And it comes down to, I think what you said was right, is that she's just desperate.
Yeah.
Her plans are bad.
Yeah.
This was not a smart idea.
Right.
Trying to buy him for not much more.
Yeah.
If you're truly trying to get them to say, ooh, that's tempting, go 100.
Yeah.
More.
Double it.
Double it.
Yeah.
That's actually tempting. Yeah. It just was not a smart move on her part.
It wasn't. And I think what also is important to recognize here is that, and this I'm alluding to Crescent City 3, but I won't give any spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
Rune is willing to do the thing you don't want him to do to make sure you're safe.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's important.
Yep.
Like, he has a ruthlessness that, like, if he loves you, he doesn't care if you hate him. He will protect you.
You know what? You and I have talked about this before in our lives and stuff, that what you're alluding to kind of rubbed me the wrong way. And it still rubs me the wrong way. But your point of that it makes sense for him.
Yeah.
I'm now on board with.
Yeah, because he's done it. He's doing it here.
He's doing it here. It's just hotter now. Chapter 72 starts with Bryce mid-attack. And I mean, so at this point, she's like run off and she's sitting by the river and she's sulking, being like, no, he wouldn't. I can't trade myself for him.
Danica, I miss you.
Why can't I be a slave? Wee.
God,
such an asshole. And so she gets attacked. And what comes through is just the isolation of everything. Quote, the river was pitch black and there was no one, no one at all who'd seen or would know. And it really comes to point out where she is mentally of mm-hmm. like, I am alone. She feels like she's going to die alone. But of course, that's not going to happen because Big Brother is there. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there's this, like, fan art of Rune, like, twirling around with a 10-year-old Bryce. Mm-hmm. I think they didn't meet till she was 14. But you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Just a little girl Bryce. And she's painting his nails.
Mm-hmm. I've done that before, too.
Oh, God. Okay. It makes sense why Bryce is so struck by Declan's words when he pulls her out. Quote, I've got you, I've got you. They remind her of Hunt. Mm-hmm. They, even though it's just like a really common phrase, but it's still, she's going from like, I feel so isolated to I'm once again being reminded of Hunt.
Mm-hmm. But also being reminded that Hunt's not there.
Yeah. Because he's not there to save her.
Nope.
We also get a hint here, but in CC2, we're going to see more. And that's the meaning of titles. Bryce is called Princess. And I think that's the first time she's called Princess in this mm-hmm. book, but I could be wrong. And she rejects the title. Rune rejects the title. Mm-hmm. Everyone's like, no, 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 no. She's no princess. It happens right when Bryce just lost all of her rights. And she's not claiming that title in order to protect herself. Which is funny because then she will claim that title to protect herself.
Yeah. I mean, she's going to do what's most convenient for her. But right now, it's also about preserving what's most important to her. And that's her human identity is most important.
Yeah. And it is going... I'm excited for when we do cover CC2. Because titles is going to be a big part of that book.
Yep.
She deletes her Rune's number in front of him.
Yeah.
It's so petty. I have no notes. My feelings are hurt. That's all.
I do have notes. Okay. So we see the power of technology in this moment. Let's take a step back. Despite not talking for years after mm-hmm. their fight when she was 16, Bryce never deleted Rune's contact information from her phone. She never deleted Declan's or Flynn's.
Yeah.
They make a comment of like, wow, you kept my number?
Yep.
And just the night before, maybe the day before, or that very same day, they just agreed to do the sibling thing on a trial basis mm-hmm. to try to hang out more. So for Bryce to delete Rune's contact information, it's not only an extreme juxtaposition of the conversation that they had just about having a trial basis, it also suggests that Rune did something way worse right now than he's ever done to her before.
Yeah.
That she is so hurt. This is the most hurt she's ever been by him that she mm-hmm. has to delete his contact information. And it's even more jarring when she, to your point, was just isolated.
Yeah.
Thinking no one's going to come save me. No one knows that I'm here. But Rune is there because he's always there to protect her. And she's like, you know what? I don't care that you saved me.
Yeah.
Like, I never want to see you again. I'd rather die.
I hope they look back on it years later and just say, hey, remember the time that you got mad at me because I stopped you from selling yourself?
Yeah.
Such a bitch. No, I mean, I just like hope one day Rune says, I told you so.
Yeah. When Bryce looks at her body and examines where she's been hurt by the Crystallis demon, she tries to find strength in the tattoo on her back. And she weeps with, I think, relief that the tattoo is unmarred. It hasn't been hurt because it represents her good times with Danica. But it's also a double-edged sword because the tattoo says, through love, all is possible. And it reminds her that, you know what? Actually, love didn't fix shit for me. Mm-hmm. Danica still lied and died. Hunt betrayed her. Rune fucked things up for her when she was trying to save Hunt. Like, love kind of shit on her, if we're being honest. And though she tried to find strength and relief in the tattoo, it ultimately ends up causing her to spiral.
Yeah. Because it's just, yeah. Quote. That's my transition. Quote. Bryce tried and failed to wrest herself from the cycle of her thought, the maelstrom that brought them around and around and around until they eddied together. And Bryce is just in a bad mental place, obviously. And that tattoo really is a reminder. It's just, you know, I'm going to say it. I haven't said it at all. I'm going to say it now. It's not a very interesting or good quote. Through love, all is possible.
No, it's terrible.
I thought it was lame.
Yeah.
To begin with, I think it's a little lame now.
Yep.
I get what she's doing, SJM, but I don't know. Just something cooler. I'd be mad at that. I'm just trying, like, you try to imagine a leather jacket. Through love, all is possible.
Yeah, no, I would not.
It's too wordy for me.
And too cheesy.
Yeah, it's five words. I'm not here. And through's a long word.
It could be love conquers all.
No, I mean,
it's still that's still cheesy, but it's shorter.
Yeah, I just feel like love plus sign.
Love plus.
Or the greater than. Let's get into some non-multiverse breadcrumbs. In chapter 65, we are constantly reminded Therion is the captain of intelligence. He is definitely the least intelligent in Flame and Shadow, and the irony is very stark here.
Yep. Also in chapter 65, between this chapter and the next, we see how the Viper Queen is a lying asshole and is double-timing and triple-timing everyone. And I just had to ask, why do we think she's worth trusting leading up to Flame and Shadow?
Right.
Everything she does is self-serving. Like, we should know better.
It is funny because I reflect on our earlier thoughts of saying, you know what?
Kind of like her. Good.
Yeah.
Nope.
We were young and naive.
Yep.
Chapter 68, quote, for some reason, Hunt had expected a stone dungeon. He didn't know why, since he'd been in these holding cells beneath the Comitium countless times to deposit the few enemies Micah wanted left alive. But he somehow pictured his capture to be the mirror of what had gone down in Pangaea. The dark, filthy dungeons of the Asteri. The ones that were so similar in Sandriel's place. Foreshadowing of two things. He'll be sold to Sandriel. And, CC3 spoiler, he'll be back in the Asteri dungeon eventually.
In chapter 68, Isaiah asks Hunt, quote, you thought that you could take the synth and do what? Kill Micah? Sandriel? All of them? More foreshadowing, because yes, they will be killed.
Yeah. In chapter 68, Bryce stores the synth antidote in the safe in Jessica's office right next to the 6-inch golden bullet for the Godslayer rifle. Life and death, salvation and destruction. Like, this is great. Setting things up.
SJM never stops setting things up.
Yep.
Still in chapter 68, the Autumn King tells Bryce, quote, just because you learned the truth regarding Danica and Athelart doesn't mean whoever wishes to use it, Luna's horn, is done. And that is truth.
In chapter 69, Rune tells Bryce that she is nothing like their father. Bryce responds, don't bullshit a bullshitter, Rune. Rune definitely sees Bryce as similar to their father, and it comes up a lot in the next two books.
Yeah, because he doesn't really think about that as much here.
He mentions it earlier in the book.
Yeah.
He does think about it, but then he thinks about it more.
Yeah.
In book two.
Yep.
And
I like that Bryce calls him out.
Yep.
In chapter 71, Sandriel says to Bryce, quote, everyone here would call me a fool to take this bargain, a half-breed with no true power or hope to come into it, in exchange for the freedom of one of the most powerful Malakim to ever darken the skies. Except she's wrong.
Yeah. And now, some multiverse thoughts and breadcrumbs. We only have one today. Chapter 66, quote, Bryce knew that handgun, the engraved silver wings on the black barrel. We know from Sky and Breath that Bryce thinks Amarin looks like Fury. Amarin, whose eyes used to be molten silver and who used to be an avenging angel like those in the Bible, and Fury has silver wings on her gun. Another unanswered question. Like,
I still think Fury is also an avenging angel.
Why would you mention that in the second book?
Right.
And never bring it up again in the third book.
Yep.
I do not know, like, not even a thought.
Nope. Like, I actually really, really loved Fury in this book. I mean, she's a shit friend, but I liked the use of her in this. And she's never useful again.
No.
She's just a waste of space.
Like, I mean, she has some uses in book two, but again, she's more plot. Driven plot device. Like, she's just there to push the plot along.
Yeah. I wish we got more of her.
I really wish we got more of her. I really wish, like, SJM would stop mentioning things just to leave him alone.
Yeah.
I am tired of that. I'm tired. A girl can only take so much.
Mm-hmm. our Bryce-ism for the week is value the good in a person while also recognizing the bad.
I don't think Bryce forgives Hunt, but she's willing to fight for him.
She's willing to fight for the good in him.
Yep.
Which does not mean she's necessarily forgiven and forgotten.
Now, please do not apply this to shit people who don't deserve it.
Right, exactly.
This is not your sign to go back to your ex.
Right.
So going back to the question we had, Amy.
Mm-hmm.
Has this moment in the plot been earned emotionally and structurally?
This one is hard to argue. So if I think back to last week, I do think that I was able to see more of the work SJM was doing to set up Hunt's betrayal.
Mm-hmm.
It's still hard to tell the timeline mm-hmm. of how many days this has been going on. However, I can see the stepping stones to Hunt's betrayal more than I have in any other reread. I think it's subtle. I think it could have been more heavy-handed.
Mm-hmm.
Emotionally, I feel like Bryce's reaction to Hunt's betrayal is justified. It is very in character for her to feel what she feels, knowing that she's been grappling with Danica's own lies throughout this novel. I also would argue her willingness to free Hunt is justified. Look at what she's done for Syrinx. We learn later in the novel that she's been working on freeing Lahaba, and she's always had a soft spot for people or animals or other individuals who are in captivity. She mm-hmm. can't stand the idea of people being in captivity. I don't know. I don't take issue with this, but I feel like you do.
Yes and no. I think two things can happen. I think that where we're at is perfect in the sense that everything happened for us to get here and it makes sense. Everything mm-hmm. in this book got us here entirely. I also feel like there could have been moments of a little bit more heavy-handedness,
yeah.
like you were saying. And I keep complaining about Bryce not being smart.
Mm-hmm.
And I can step back and say there's been a descent in her intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen her make dumber and dumber choices.
Yeah.
And I can argue now that this is probably a direct impact on how she handles things in book two. And what I mean by that is in book two, Bryce makes a lot of moves without Hunt.
Yeah.
Now that I'm reading this, probably punishing him.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Probably to be like, you did all this shit without me. Now, granted, she has other reasons that she gives in that book. Like,
yeah,
you don't care about humans as much as you think you do and stuff. But like, I think she becomes more conniving and manipulative in book two because of how dumb her choices are right now.
Yeah. Well, and also how much she is hurt by Hunt's choices.
Yeah.
I like that you bring that up. I do think we do see a lot of residual impacts from what's happening in this book into Sky and Breath. So I look forward to analyzing it. I also think you call Bryce conniving and manipulative after this. I think
I don't mean that in a bad way.
No. I don't think it is either. What I think I'm seeing is desperation on Bryce's part. And I don't mm-hmm. think that desperation is going to go away anytime soon. But she recognizes she needs to be smarter than she has been.
Because the two dumb things, and I'm sure there's more, but the two ones that stand out right now is the whole trying to find synth, you know,
like going
at the meat market. And it's like, girl, what do you think you're doing? Of course, you're not being original. You have the Umbra Mortis with you.
Right.
A cop.
Right.
What are you thinking? And then this right now, where willing to sell herself, these are not Bryce moves.
No.
This is not her norm. And it does show you just how far off she's come
mm-hmm.
from not just trusting Hunt, but, you know, forgetting a little bit of who she is. And who she is a planner.
Right. And I think what we're going to see the rest of this novel and in Sky and Breath is she reclaims her independence from Hunt.
Yes.
And I think that she's still capable of loving Hunt and having a relationship with him. But what this moment of this book has taught her is she needs to be independent from him.
Yeah.
Because their ability to be together is not guaranteed.
Which is hilarious because it's almost like this is the book, this is the moment where she realizes, oh, damn, I do need to be independent. I made such dumb choices
mm-hmm.
in regards to him. at the same time, we have Hunt realizing, I want my entire life surrounded by you.
Yeah, I want to be codependent on you.
Absolutely. And you do see them butt heads on that.
Yeah, they do struggle with it for the next two books.
Yeah, where Bryce is like, nah, brah, be on my schedule or none at all.
Right.
And he's just saying, please let us live in La La Land.
Yeah, yeah.
And have nothing to do with anything.
Yeah.
And it is, yeah, I'm going to continue to be annoyed at her lack of intelligence, but I am being willing to be more sold on why that is.
And I think what I'm getting out of our conversation now and what I'm appreciating is that, yeah, she's made poor choices up until now. He's made more poor choices up until now. But what is solidified in this set of chapters has long-term impacts.
Yeah, and it really does.
Will be consistently a problem. All the way till the end of Flame and Shadow.
Yeah. And, you know, having only read Flame and Shadow once, I have no idea if they actually come to a resolution in it.
I don't feel like they did.
I think they just kind of like save the world.
Yeah. I think Hunt's just like, I'll be mad about this later.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like if I remember, it's like, ah, damn it, I'll be on your side. Because Bryce is like, I need you to be on.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Sorry, spoiler for CC3. But Bryce is like, I need you to be on my side.
Yeah.
I need you, like, regardless of your love for me, care about what I care about. And Hunt's like, fine, I guess, if I must.
Yeah.
But really, I'm just doing it for you.
Yeah. Something for us to explore later.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Book Talk for Book Talk. We encourage you to rate and subscribe to our show on your preferred podcast listening platform. Next week, we will be exploring chapter 73 through 79 of House of Earth and Blood.
We would love to hear your thoughts based on today's conversation. You can submit your comments to our form at booktalkforbooktalk.com for a chance to have your feedback discussed during a future mini episode.
If you are enjoying the podcast, please visit our website, booktalkforbooktalk.com, to view our latest merch and learn about supporting the show through Patreon, Ko-Fi, or Venmo. You can also follow us on TikTok or Instagram at the handle booktalkforbooktalk. Bye!
I enjoyed that conversation.
Yeah, it was a good conversation.
Yeah. Okay. This is me not reading it at all. I will say my reading out loud skills have been better because I've gotten better because at work I read out loud and I did a good job.
Nice.
Okay. Bryce's worst nightmares come true when she discovers Hunt and his fallen. So I really hyped myself up.
Good job.
Thank you. I mean, I overhyped myself when speaking out loud, but
it's okay.
In San Diego, my hotel had a creepy hallway, and I was telling everyone that it was haunted. They're like, is it actually? I'm like, no, the hallway's long. So, yeah.